The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
My mother grabbed me by the foot and dragged me out from under the bed. And I'm crying. Brother Hale's crying. Mrs. Hale's crying. She's trembling where she can hardly stand up. And then my mother and I hitchhiked 175 miles from Houston to Austin, Texas.
Share in this tender moment as James describes the tragic circumstances of his childhood. Next on Life Today.
There's no way to describe how much I wish you were right here with us. I'm sitting here by this beautiful girl. And now let's face it, we have been married 60 years. We dated 4 years. And no, we were very well behaved because this lady, she guarded her virtue and her heart like I asked her to. And there were times when she had to have Chuck Norris defenses because sometimes I wasn't going to behave. But we've been together 60 years, and I've been in ministry 60 years. And I want you to know that the greatest joy, other than our family and the 25, soon to be 26 grandchildren, is you. And I really mean that. I'm talking about you are the greatest. I don't like the word donors. You're the greatest supporters of sharing God's life and God's love with the most overlooked and the least of these all over the world, plus making certain that we effectively deliver the gospel so that we win in millions of people to Christ. I'm going to share the 80-year journey that I've been on, and Betty's been on 64 years of that journey. And that's what I'm going to be talking about this week. And if you wonder why, James, are you going to talk about your journey, because the life that I had, the fatherlessness, the broken home, the poverty that I lived in, very great gross poverty, is so typical of a lot of what is setting us on the wrong track today in our country. And much of what we see happening that is very troubling to us and disturbing is because of the dysfunctional or the total breakdown of the family and marriages. And so let me just say this to you. If you didn't know the story, I'm the product of a forced sexual relationship, a rape imposed on a hospice home nurse. My mother, Betty, was what they used to call a practical nurse. Mm-hmm. Now they call them home nurses or hospice nurses. But they call them practical nurses, and she was taking care of an elderly man in his home, which is actually the best way she could live because she didn't have a marriage. She had divorced years before. She had adopted a boy that was 14 years older than I. And, you know, they just really weren't together. He was now at this time in the military and so forth. But the point is she was raped by the alcoholic son of the elderly man, and she conceived her first child. She was not supposed to be able to have a child. She was not supposed to be able to conceive. But in a rape, she did. And not having a steady job, not having a marriage, and here she is 40 years old and she's pregnant, she went to have an abortion. It was in Houston, Texas, where this happened. And the doctor refused to do it. Most of you know this story, and I was born. I was allowed to be born. And Betty immediately, this desperate woman, put an ad in the newspaper and asked for some caring couple. And she even used the word Christian couple to come get a little boy. And a pastor and his wife named H.D. Hale at Memorial Baptist Church in Pasadena, where you happened to be a member, young member. You had been born there. Well, you were actually born after I was, mm-hmm. but when they got me, you ultimately were in that church, yeah. and we were in the nursery together because I stayed with them until I was 5 years old. And I called Brother Miss Hale Mommy and Daddy. And they knew because my mother said, you're going to be able to adopt James. And so they were just so excited, and the whole church was excited that this was happening and praying for me. And I was very ill when they got me, and they said, at least their doctor reported it, that I was miraculously healed because the doctor told them I was going to die within the first weeks that they had me. And they said, well, we really believe we're supposed to have this little boy. Well, that church prayed for me. I lived. And they told me that I had a mother, but they were my mommy and daddy. But my mother would come to see me. And this is when I'm a few years old. She would come and get me and take me away for a few days. And Betty, I can still remember this because my mother didn't have the kind of care and support she needed. And she had to work during the day some. She would leave me with people I didn't even know. And I can remember this as distinctly as if it happened yesterday. I would go and I would press my little nose up against the screen of whatever window I could get to. And I would just look and look as a little 3 or 4 year old boy, wondering if my mother was coming back. And I'd just cry. I didn't know if she was coming back. I was a little boy that didn't know where I was going to end up. And Betty, that illustration and what happened to me is one of the things that touched me so much as ultimately God led me and you to the third world countries and to the impoverished and to children that have been abandoned and left. And one of the things, I don't know if you saw the Academy Award-winning movie years ago, Slumdog Millionaire, but it was about little children in India that were left on the railroad tracks. And when the people would walk up to them, and it was Kathy Hendrick of Hendrick Motorsports who lost her twin girls in a plane crash and her husband, she told me, she said, James, when I went over there with your mission team to reach out those children, we'd go to the little children on the railroad track, and we would walk up, and they would be there just alone. And they would look up at us and say, we don't think anybody's coming back to get us. And the minute she said that, because I was sitting at a lunch table with her with several people in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I began to weep. And she said, what's wrong? I said, when you said, I don't know if anybody's coming back, that's what I thought when I was a little boy. I don't know if anybody's coming back. And Kathy Hendrick said, James, that's the reason we took those children and we took them to the home that your supporters and now the Hendrick family that we've helped you build to provide homes for them. Well, see, I feel what people feel that have been abandoned, that feel overlooked and neglected. And that is the reason, even as I'm talking to you about my journey today, I'm wanting to make sure you understand that no matter what happens, see, Betty and I are going to be able to talk about 60 years of a joy-filled marriage. I mean, not without challenges, but to think that we've been together 60 years of marriage and you can tell the love we have for each other and the love we have for our family and for others. And sometimes when I talk about that, I feel a regret that some of you are saying, I wish I could say that. Well, I do too. And somehow I want to gets you into the center of the loving arms of God to the point that no matter what you face, you feel His comfort. And every day when we come into your home, we do talk about the overlooked and the most neglected and the least of these and about how we can be the miracle that they long for. We talk about that. And many of you join us and you become the miracle. You become the source of life. But I care about you. And we're here every day wanting you to know that no matter what you face, no matter what you go through or you've been going through, God wants to comfort you. He wants to be your source of peace and strength and comfort and hope. And that's why we come to you to share that. So when I tell my story and I go back and I talk about the challenges and the difficulty, please know that regardless of what we face, God is able to lift us out of the despair and the hopelessness and the pain and put our feet on an unshakable rock and establish our ways, which is what happened to me. But Betty, what people need to understand is during those first 5 years, when I was there with the Reverend Hale and his wife, Katie Bell, when I was there, I thought I had home. And one day my mother came and she said, you're going to go with me, James. You're going with me. I'm going to take you with me. And I ran and I hid under the bed. And I can remember it like yesterday. My mother grabbed me by the foot and dragged me out from under the bed. And I'm crying. Brother Hale's crying. Mrs. Hale is crying. She's trembling where she can hardly stand up. The pastor has to hold his wife lest she collapse. And my mother took me by the hand. I remember Brother Hale trying to hand her some money. She wouldn't take it, and she didn't have any. She had enough money to ride the bus across town to the other side of Houston. And then my mother and I hitchhiked 175 miles from Houston to Austin, Texas. Here I am, a little five-year-old, with my mother, who is now nearly 50. She's trying to stop traffic. I had in my hand, and I have showed our viewing audience this before, I had this little suitcase, and I would sit on it because I would be very tired. But everything I had is in this suitcase. It stays in my office right by my desk because I will never forget what happened. When I left the home I'd been in, I lived 10 years, moving 17 times. Betty, none of the houses faced the street. I remember taking you and trying to show you where the houses were, and those places had been totally changed and demolished. I lived on alleys. I lived on two dirty rivers. I lived on two dumps. They were not like garbage dumps. They were like salvage yard dumps. But that was where I lived. We got our mail, Betty, at somebody else's house. We didn't even have an address. I was on an alley. I was always the place out back. I had to take my friends to my house and lead them around other houses. In moving 17 times, nobody knows you. I didn't develop friends. And Betty, I had a lot of athletic ability, but I wouldn't even get picked. When I would go to a place, I'd still be standing there when they went off to play. And then when they got to know me, they found out I was pretty gifted, and I would end up being one of the team captains, but then I'm gone again. And I look back on all that. I had all this ability, and yet I never got to be in sports. And when I got up into junior high or high school, my mother said, "I don't want you to play sports," and she wouldn't let me. And I look back, if you remember when you and I got married and we were dating, I was a very good basketball player. Yeah. I led the city of Houston in scoring the year we got married in basketball. And I had two scholarships, one to an undefeated national championship team. And I would have started every game, but I said, "No, God called me to preach and I'm not going to do it." But the day we got married, now you think about this, this is our wedding day. This is 60 years ago. I played in the state championship on our wedding day and made 24 points in the first half, okay? That's pretty good. And all my shots were from outside the circle, but we didn't have a three-point play. When I got in college, in two different colleges, I averaged 40 points a game in the intramural programs without a three-pointer, but my shots were three-pointers. So it was humble. I said, "God, why can't I do sports?" But he wouldn't let me. He said, "James, you're going to preach. That's all you're going to do. It is all I've done for 60 years, and I'm telling you, I look back and I think, God, I'm glad sports wasn't the center of my life. I'm glad I didn't get to do those things because I'm so competitive, I probably would have had to get seriously injured to ever get me to stop it. But here I am now. I am with this beautiful girl, and you got to know what happened to me. My alcoholic father came into our home when I was 14 years old. The man that raped my mother. And Betty, I remember he parked the car in the middle of the yard where we were staying at one of my mother's cousin's house. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he didn't even hit the side of the curb. He pulled the car right up in the middle of the yard. He was drunk. And the man came into our home, and then my mother began nursing a man and staying in the home they rented for her to care for this elderly man. And we had that house, and my father came in and literally beat my mother up and thought he had killed her. Had she not passed out, he would have killed her. A few days later, he came in and told me he was going to kill me. He didn't know. I'd always wanted to go hunting sometime in my life. I had bought a 30-06 rifle. And when my father said, "I'm going to kill you," I ran. I remember grabbing a baseball bat that was leaning up against the wall in case he was chasing me. I was going to stop him with that bat. I was very angry that he had choked my mother, thinking he'd killed her, and now he says he's going to kill me. I grabbed my rifle, shoved a shell into it, and I went back in the other room where he was sitting, and as close as I am to this television camera, I pointed that rifle at my father, and I said, "If you move as much as a finger," now this is exactly what I said to him, I'm 14 years old, "if you move as much as a finger, I'm going to blow a hole in you big enough for someone to crawl through." And I meant it. Now listen to me. Had he done this, I would have killed him. Think about it. I reached up and dialed O on the phone. I said, "Send the police. I'm going to shoot my father. If he makes a move, you better get here fast. He said he's going to kill me." And they were there in 10 minutes. Arrested my father. He was ultimately in prison for 7 years. But here's what happened to me. I said, I have to leave. I have to leave. And I told my mother that I loved. I've been with her. She was all I had for 10 years. We were very close. My mother did not let me play sports, but my mother did not hurt me when it came to believing in God and believing in Jesus. She had many ideas that were wrong. She was theologically and biblically wrong, as you know, about many things. For instance, she told me as a boy that the original sin was sex. Now, think about this. Here I am, a kid going into my teens, and I'm pretty wired. And my mother tells me the original sin is sex. Well, that kind of set me back. Matter of fact, it set me back all the way up to the time that we even got married, because I'm saying, Jesus, please don't come back until I get married and have sex. In other words, it was big to me. But what my mother was telling me during that span that I was with her, it hurt me so bad. It caused me to be very vulnerable to pornographic images, all kinds of things that would feed the bad part of life. And I'm going to say this to you. Listen, I think that the things that we see and the things that we're turned on by and influenced by, and today it's indescribable what kids are exposed to. Let me just say this to you. Ask God to help you avoid all forms of anything He says is evil, because I believe it is hurting us and it is setting us up for destruction. God in heaven, deliver us from what the enemy is throwing at us that appeals to our appetites, everything from food to sweets to sex to whatever it is that turns us on, and it begins to control us and can destroy everything you intended to bless us. In Jesus' name, please do not allow the enemy to get a grip on you. Well, Betty, I left home. I went to Pasadena. I went back with the preacher and his wife, and they wanted me to meet this girl. And I did, and I had a date with her. And I knew I had met the purest, sweetest girl on the planet. And I told you, always stay the way you are. I fell in love with you the moment I met you. I went home and got down on my knees that night. And I said, God, I met a pure girl. God, please protect her and take care of her. And God, help me be different. My wife started the journey to see me change. I'm going to tell you about that in the next program, because the change is the reason that you even know us. It's the reason you know me as an evangelist. And you need to hear what happened. And you need to hear what happened to this, I say, the first church lady God ever made. She had to be the original. I want her to tell you what happened when she met a fatherless boy that met that father, and what it did to both of us. And then what you did that changed both our lives forever, way beyond marriage. As a matter of fact, it's impacted you, and I'm going to tell you about it. Listen to me right now. You know that every time you watch it, by the way, you're going to hear my journey, and you're going to hear what God did in an impossible situation. By the way, I let my mother know I couldn't live in the atmosphere I'd lived in anymore, and of course, it broke her heart. But I had to leave. I couldn't have left without this girl that's sitting by me right here and a friend of ours that helped me leave. It was the toughest thing I ever did, but it was the wisest thing I ever did until I heard the call to do what He wanted me to do with my life. You know that every time you come and watch Life Today, you're going to have an opportunity to become somebody's miracle. You are going to be able to touch the least of these, the most overlooked people perhaps on the planet, and put the loving arms of God around them. We're going to ask you right now to help us save the lives, this is not an exaggeration, of hundreds, even thousands of precious children. I want you to listen to our mission director, John Yates, Listen to what he says about what God's love has done through you and will continue to do. And I pray today, you say, God, I'm going to be the miracle someone is praying for. And you will be. Watch very carefully.
So James, Betty, I'm here in South Sudan where we many, many years ago first began the work in South Sudan with our mission partners, the Pretorius family, Jesus Alive Ministries. One of the lessons that you have taught me over the years is to think big. You've inspired our people to think big. Well, James, the fact is this line represents it, big thinking, enormous thinking. From those first 5,000 children that you helped us feed back in 1989 to today, the African governments say that we've seen the lives of more than 18 million people saved. And as we come to the time in just a few months where we get to celebrate your 60th wedding anniversary, your 60th year of ministry, together with our partners, I just wanted to say to you how important it is, James. As much as we have done, there is still a very, very urgent need for more mission feeding all over the continent of Africa. Angola, the food crisis that's going on there with the drought, the continued struggles that the people there face. Here, South Sudan, other places that we're working. We need our partners, and so I'm asking you, James, once again, to inspire our partners to think big. Think bigger than what we've ever thought before so that we can feed more children and that we can save more lives until Jesus comes.
Betty, you and I have been giving that soup out for more than 30 years. In our 60-year marriage, for 30 years, we've been doing that. For over 30 years, I did the Crusades and Colosseums. And he told you a moment ago that we have saved the lives of 18 million children in the feeding programs alone. That's not counting what giving people fresh water wells does. That's just feeding. And I want all of you to know this, please, right now. We have got 350,000 children located. We've got them basically where we have them organized, and we can put them in the line like you saw there in South Sudan. That had just been organized in the last weeks, and you can see how many were there. And we're able to get them under control because we've become their hope for life and the reason they're going to gain strength and already are. And those that you saw standing there, some of them had actually come to that feeding center from another to help teach the children what you do so that they learn together. It's a beautiful thing to watch. But Betty, to think that our viewers have helped us save 18 million lives, and when we're asking them to help 350,000 in the feeding areas now, if each person would take 3, 5, or 10, it takes $30, $50, or $100 to feed 3 children, 5 children, or 10 children for the next months. If you'll do that, we'll be able to feed those. And Betty, I hope that our viewers, maybe you can help them understand that all that we do and the missionaries see that needs to be done, it just becomes a prayer. And oftentimes we could just weep were it not for our viewers. They're
Excellent.
The ones who make it happen.
Maybe you and maybe many of you have been on this long journey with us. You've seen the times when I just saw Peter Pretorius, James. He's gone on to be with the Lord. But he led many of these journeys that we went on. And to see the children and how far we have come to help them and to save the lives. And we continue to because you have contributed to that. So I hope you'll continue to join with us and let's continue to make the difference in saving the lives of these precious children.
Would you right now make the best gift you can to help us give the greatest gift of life? We need a miracle of support. We've got some beautiful gifts for you, but you're going to be giving people life. Could you give $100 to feed 10 children? Could you give $1,000 to feed 100? You say, James, you always ask big. I always will. But remember this, $30 will literally feed 3 children for the next months. 50 will feed 5. 100 will feed 10. There's a level at which you can help. Go get your bank card. Go online or call that number. Please make the gift God put on your heart. Please do it. We're going to bless you with some gifts. But you really are giving the greatest gift. You're giving people life. And we're going to show them Jesus. That's what your love does. We will win them to Christ. You will save their lives. Jesus will save their soul because they're going to see God's love through your love. Thank you so much.
Across the continent of Africa, children are suffering, facing severe malnutrition and even death. With food reserves gone and many areas experiencing severe famine, we urgently need to replenish supplies to keep feeding the 350,000 children who are counting on us. Through Life's Mission Feeding Outreach, your gift of love can be an answer to prayer for a hurting and hungry child in their time of need. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you 365 days of courage. Filled with scriptures and words of encouragement, this daily devotional will give you the confidence that comes from knowing how God sees you. Take courage in Christ's love and be ready to conquer each day. With your gift of $100 or more, please request the Blessing Framed Art. This beautiful wall art will grace your home or office and serve as a daily reminder of God's blessing and kindness over your family. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Consider the Birds, inspired by Jesus' words in Matthew 6:26. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
Well, thank you so much, and you don't want to miss tomorrow. Betty's going to tell you what happened to her because she met a fatherless kid who met the father, and what happened to the church lady. But then what happened after we got married, and then what has happened in the years that followed, and then we're going to talk about what's going to happen now because of what God's going to do with his family. And that really does include us. And I'm talking about you. I'm talking about us. His family. The body of Christ. Don't miss any of the programs this week. Thanks for your help.
Join James and Betty as they open up about the early years of walking with Jesus and surrendering to his ministry tomorrow on Life Today. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.